Welcome to Talking Walking, hosted by Andrew Stuck from Rethinking Cities in London. Talking Walking brings you interviews with people from the world of walking, artists, activists, professionals, and those of us who have a passion for just taking a walk. In this episode, I talk to Katrina Nairmi, a poet and ardent walker who lives in South London but yearns for wilder places in which to walk. She was the first writer in residence at the Bronte Parsonage Museum in Haworth, West Yorkshire, and will be in residence at the Gladstone Library in Howarden, Flintshire, in 2013. The interview was recorded in September 2011 on a walk across Streatham Common, close to where Katrina lives. We're walking in Streatham, we're heading towards the Rookery, and I'm with Katrina Nairmi. And Katrina, tell me, you're a poet. How did you get involved in poetry, and how long have you been a poet?
I've probably been writing poetry for about 13 years, something like that. I got into poetry very much by mistake. I'd always hated poetry, thought it was really boring and couldn't see any point in it whatsoever. When we did it at school, I just thought it was completely dull. But I thought everything at school was completely dull. But I was writing short stories. I went away on a sort of first course, I suppose, like a weekend course. The tutor asked us all to write something like from the heart, something you really care about. And so I wrote this piece, and then we all had to read it out, and it was the first time I'd ever had to read.
Was that frightening?
Anything out. Yeah, it was petrifying. And I read this thing out, and she said to me, "Well, that's not a story." And I was thinking, "No, it's shit," and all the rest of it. And then she said, "Hey, you've written a poem." I said, "Well, I can't have written a poem because A, I don't like poetry, B, I don't know anything about it, and you know, it's really not my sort of thing, you know." And well, she said, "Well, you definitely written a poem." She said, "You know, why don't you enrol on a adult education class?" And I did. I started going to the City Lit. Yeah, it sort of all sort of came alive for me, really. So, and now I think I'm completely obsessed.
and what's more, you've overcome your anxiety of speaking in public, because you're a performance poet.
It's really difficult, this thing between performance and not performance. It seems a bit of an unnecessary divide to me. But I like performing my work, put it like that. But I'm not someone that sort of memorises all of their, you know, pieces and sort of performs them like that. I tend to write probably with the page in mind, but then hope I can sort of perform it reasonably well. You know, I love doing readings, so.
When people listen to this recording and they can say, "Well, Andrew, why are you recording an interview with a poet?" So shall we sort of creep into the area of walking? How's that influenced your poetry writing?
Well, I think it does a lot. It gives you a lot of space in your head. I mean, I'm not like Wordsworth, who sort of, you know, used to sort of make up whole things in his head while he was walking. But I do use it to sort of clear my head a lot, in the same way that I might do a lot of free writing before I start actually to try and get a poem going. Because it just sort of, like, you know, frees your mind up. And I think walking about 20 minutes or so, you begin to go into a slightly different zone, I think. And so that's one of the things. But I love doing sort of long distance paths, and I think they really do put you in completely into another zone. And I've got a number of poems I really like out of sort of some long distance paths I've done. Not that probably a specific walking poems, but they're about particular places, you know, little bothies or something that you would only find if you were mad enough to go walking for weeks on end in Wales or something. I think it's mad to go walking in Wales. I think it's a brilliant place, but you know, just just come across places that you wouldn't do otherwise.
So you use the walking as a method to sort of get the creativity going,
to free
the mind.
Yes.
Have you ever sort of set out, you know, on particular walking journeys and saying, you know, by the end of this I will have written or will have composed some poetry?
Yes, I definitely sort of set myself tasks, if you like. Like that. Last year, I worked with a sort of sound artist, and we never met each other before. We were sort of set a sort of like a commission. And there was a group of poets and visual artists who were paired, and we had 10 minutes to come up with a project that we wanted to both work on. And so we'd never met each other before, and I didn't know anything at all about him. And I said I wanted to do something to do with walking. And he said he wanted to do something to do with sound. He lived in Essex, I live in Streatham. And we decided on Brixton, that would be an interesting place, because I worked in Brixton for about 13 years, so I know it really well. But I still think if you're walking, and writing about somewhere, you see it differently, even if it's somewhere that you feel that you know well. And so we decided to do to meet at 6 in the morning to work out about a mile and a half route round Brixton. Yeah, Brixton Herne Hill, back through Brockwell Park. And so we sort of did this continuous sort of walk, sort of four times on exactly the same route. And we'd stop at allotted places that wherever one of us just decided, right, this is a good place to write, or this is a good place to record. And he was also taking photos. And then stopped at exactly those same points each time and wrote again, or, you know, and did another sort of sound. So we sort of saw how, you know, Brixton changed over a day. You know, the market getting set up, shops opening, shops closing, you know, pubs opening.
And then, and you sent me the poem.
Yeah,
it was a tremendous piece of work. Not just in the quality, but in the quantity. You wrote a lot. Is that typical of your poems?
No, it's completely one of the things I really liked about the project, and perhaps working with somebody else. No, normally, I mean, my poems are probably quite short. So that's about sort of 4 or 5 pages worth. And, I'd never written anything as long as that before or since, actually. So.
And was it something that just the writing came to you while you were doing the walking, or was it something that you wrote afterwards notes?
It was what I wrote at the time.
Right.
I mean, very much, obviously, you know, in sort of like a tiny little notebook and just scribbling away furiously. And then the following day or the following few days, I sort of transcribed it all out. And then obviously there's a hell of a lot of editing goes on, but I had to have it ready. I think it was a matter of weeks afterwards to perform it. Chris, the guy I was working with, had also been sort of filming me while I was sort of speaking some of it, just, you know, coming out straight away while we were doing the walk. So it was a very different way of working to normal. I might sort of take a notebook with me quite often and sort of scribble along, but then I'll go back and think about it and decide whether that might form the basis for something for a poem, whereas that was very much writing this thing, you know, as I was going, which was, it's an utterly different way of working. Good for imagery, because it was very immediate, and I wanted to try and capture things, you know, immediately.
Yeah. So, well, you've not come with a notebook, have you?
No, I haven't, no.
And are you going to suddenly spout some poetry at me?
No.
Okay, no, won't put you on the spot. Okay, no. So something else that slipped out in the conversations we've had is that you mentioned that you were a mountain guide, and you've already mentioned you'd like long walks and possibly in the, I don't know, the Brecon Beacons or Snowdonia or somewhere. Yeah. So okay, where's this come from and what's and tell us a little bit about that.
I don't know where the whole, you know, the walking is a complete passion really, and I'm not entirely sure where it came from. I know it was when we first went to Ireland, myself and my partner, we thought it would be good to do something different than just sort of trail around towns, because neither of us are into shopping or whatever. And so we booked up and went on a walking holiday, and we'd never been walking before, you know, further than the pub and back sort of thing. So I think we both sort of thought we were reasonably fit, but, you know, it certainly tested us going up Kerry and quite a few of some decent sized hills around there and some great bogs and things, and we just loved it. And then decided quite soon afterwards to do the coast to coast. And then did Pennine Way.
Hang on, yeah. Risa, the coast to coast is from where to where in England?
Oh, that's the Wainwright one.
Right.
Which starts off in the other side of the lakes and then goes through Yorkshire Dales.
You did this properly, you were carrying all the kids and camping?
No, we weren't camping, no, we stayed in youth hostels. I think carrying all of our kit as well as... We'd have had to carry it. We're both vegan, so we'd have had to carry pretty much all of our food, because it's not quite so easy to, you know, just be able to buy stuff all the time. So, we decided to youth hostel it. Which...
We still haven't got to the base of the guiding yet.
Oh, right,
you went from being a participant to a leader. What?
Yeah. I suppose I think probably frustration at not necessarily always being able to, you know, pick up a map and compass and really know what I was doing with it. My partner was always really good at map reading, and I think I just sort of thought, I need to be able to do this. And there was a few times when, you know, obviously if you're walking in the hills and the mist comes down and the fog, and you need to know what you're doing. And
but micro navigation's important.
Yeah, and I think I realised a few times I was being reliant on him, and I didn't like that idea. I thought, no, I need to be able to stand on my own 2 feet and one of us got hurt, you know, I'd need to be able to sort that out. And I thought, you can't go walking and rely on somebody else, not if you're going to go walking, you know, in some decent places. So yeah, I think I also wanted to test myself a bit. My mum was very ill. I think I needed something to take myself out.
And where did you learn to become a guide? I mean, where's that done?
In the Lake District.
Since learning, have you taken people out, or you just did it for your own self-preservation?
A lot of it was for my own feeling, sort of, you know, feeling confident up in the hills or on moors, not wanting to be reliant on a man, really. So so that was a good thing for me to do, overcoming some fears and the like. So I've taken a few groups out with the Ramblers Association and Walking Women. That was back up in the lakes. Yes, sort of acted as a guide with them, which was great. But I've sort of come to realise that actually I prefer walking on my own, or maybe with one other person. And I think sometimes there can be a risk of, if it's something that you really, really love, and whether that's poetry or walking, I think, you know, when you make it your job as well, you have to sort of strive quite hard not to almost destroy it in the process. And I think, had I been doing that as my job all the time, and I did get a bit fed up of sort of sometimes people turning up and they'd say, you know, you'd all be there, like, just be chatting with people. Then they go, well, where's the guide then? And I'd say, oh, it's me. And people would be looking at me and say, you? You know, and you know, you're female and you're young, but, you know, younger than they think you're going to be.
Yeah.
Or you don't look right, or whatever it is. I
didn't look weathered enough. That was your problem,
I don't know. But, yeah, and I actually had two men on a walk who asked me if I could use a compass.
Right, okay. Okay, so amongst all the different walks and things, okay, you could talk about your local walks.
Yeah.
Or you could talk about, you know, recommend a really good walk. Maybe a really good walk for walking and a really good walk for poems.
Probably much the same, I'd say. Let's see, a really good... Well, the walk we're doing now, which is up from Streatham Station and up Streatham Common, and up the top round the Rookery, is a nice little sort of half an hour. And the Rookery is a great place to sort of sit and read, and I do write up there quite a bit.
It's one of those places which is...
It's a bit hidden.
It's a secret place,
yes,
isn't it?
And
interesting enough, I've had quite a lot of people tell me that it's one of the most romantic places they found in South London.
Yeah,
and I think it's because it's unexpected.
Yes, it is. Yeah. It's great. But I like really wild places. Pretty much any of the Cambrian Way would get my vote, or anything on the North York Moors.
It's for writing as well as walking.
I think for inspiration and you know, really clearing your head out, and preferably it should rain. So you feel like you're pitting yourself against the elements.
So you're definitely not a fair weather walker.
No. I like a good bit of wind and rain on a walk. It adds interest.
Having found poetry something dreadful and boring and dull
yeah.
and not to engage with at school, you've now gone into higher education in a big way. So perhaps
So
can you try and explain what you're doing at Goldsmiths?
I'm just finished a first year of a PhD in creative writing, but in my case it just means poetry. This is going to really put people off, but my research is on violence in poetry. Although I love sort of walking, I like walking in rugged places, and I suppose they have a sort of a bit of a brutality about them, which is something I rather like. I'm not really so much of the Wordsworth school, I'm more of the sort of a bit more of a realist school perhaps. That's what I'm researching, but also working towards a second full collection at the moment. Lucky enough to have a first collection. The Girl with the Cactus Handshake came out in 2009, and I've had two pamphlets out, one with the Bronte Society, because I worked as first writer in residence, so that meant I got to walk on the moors every day.
Tell us a little bit more about that.
I was mainly writing in the museum. All the sort of Bronte's ephemera was sort of backwards and forwards there for about 9 months or so. So it's quite a contrast between South London and Haworth and its beautiful moors. Yeah, I was getting paid to write, which is every poet's dream, really. I wrote a load of poetry sort of that was Bronte related, and they decided to publish a pamphlet called Charlotte Bronte's Corset out of what I'd written. Used to write first thing in the morning, then go and walk for a couple of hours every afternoon up on the moors, and it would be a really good place sometimes for editing as well. you know, you've sort of written all this stuff and you're thinking, something's not quite right here and I can't quite get the sentiment I want, or the verb's wrong, you know, it's not active enough or something, and you know, going and stomping along on the moors on your own, and then suddenly you'd think, that's the verb I need.
And so how long ago was that?
That was last year and a bit of the year before, yeah. It was meant to just be quite a short piece of work, and then they seemed to like what I was writing and just asked me to keep going, really. And I worked with a local women's group in Bradford, and I worked with them doing a sort of a series of workshops for 6 weeks. Oh, it was a brilliant experience.
You've been listening to Talking Walking, brought to you by Rethinking Cities in London. In this episode, you've heard from Katrina Naomi. If you have any views on this interview or any walking issues, we'd love to hear from you. Just follow the links on the Talking Walking website. We look forward to having you along for future episodes of Talking Walking. Written, recorded and produced by Andrew Stuck of Rethinking Cities Limited, our artwork is designed by Ian Martin of Aardvark Graphics, and the music is composed by Simon Sanders of Easy Trike.